Welcome to Beauty and the Gi, a podcast about jujitsu and so much more. I'm AJ Klingerman, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt obsessed with jiu-jitsu.
And I'm Jennifer Risser, a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. Who knows how I got here?
I think that might be part of what we're talking about today.
I think it is.
So the subject today is basically what makes a black belt in jiu-jitsu. This kind of came from our friend Amy. Amy loves a shout out on the podcast, by the way.
Amy Dillon! She told me today that I could pet her emotional support raccoon when she gets one, so we're on good terms.
Exactly. And I saw she's registered for White Belt Camp.
I'm very excited about that, our Open Guard camp in October.
Yep, October 17th through the 19th.
Camp is currently 12% off.
It is. So this podcast will drop on Thursday, and then it's 12% off until Sunday, August 3rd, with the code SLAY12. That's SLAY12. In honor of our 12th camp that we just wrapped up.
Of course, of course.
It's not the only thing on sale.
So many things are on sale.
Everything's on sale. Everything on our website. You can use the code on all of it, including the gear that we already have marked down 50% off.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So our friend Amy Dillon, she had posted on, I think, the Women's Grappling Network, of the grappling networks, on Facebook, sort of just about, you know, she's at brown belt. She's like a year into brown belt. She's looking down the barrel of black belt, which I feel like is a precise phrase I said in the last podcast. Is that my thing? And she's just not feeling super sure about what black belt should look like or does look like, feeling maybe some imposter syndrome and that kind of thing. So we thought we might speak on that just a little bit.
Kind of what our thoughts are on it. It's really funny because when she posted that and I commented basically on the next episode of Beauty and the Gi. And then I'm driving down the road and into my feed comes the Chewy podcast on being a black belt, which, you know, then we have the thought process of like, do we still do this? But I think we have different perspectives, you know, kind of different outlooks on it. I love to listen to Chewy's podcast, but also it's going to be, you know, an hour or 2 hours long. And we hope to get this to you in about 20, 25 minutes.
If not, Jen will cut it down to that.
That's right.
And I don't listen to Chewy's podcast at all, so I have no idea what he said.
Yeah. Okay. Well, great.
I'm not a podcast listener too much.
She says on our podcast. No,
I'm just kidding. I mean, you know, I listen to it when I edit it. Yeah. But an hour or two, that's too much of a commitment.
It is long.
20 minutes is the vibe for sure.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we've stuck with most of the time. But you and I had this conversation a lot when you were a brown belt, particularly when we were in the Dominican. We were in the pool just floating around talking about like what does it mean to be a black belt? Do you remember what we kind of came up with from that conversation?
I remember. So I, for the record, I gave Amy actual advice on the post and AJ just proposed a new podcast, just so you know.
You should listen.
Everybody thinks you're the good one, but I'm the good one. At least sometimes. Anyway, so we talked a lot. We had a lot of conversations. I had deep imposter syndrome about it. A thing about jiu-jitsu, or really anything that you spend a lot of time on, a lot of energy on learning, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And so as you climb the ranks, sometimes, you know, you were more confident at white or blue belt than purple or brown belt because you just recognize there's levels to this. And so I think the overarching thing that we sort of landed on was a black belt is someone who is furthering the art in their community, in their knowledge, actively training, actively being a member of their community. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're teaching, but it does mean that they're furthering it in some capacity or another.
Yeah. It also doesn't mean that they're necessarily competing, right? So I think that, you know, there are many gyms that have a lot of black belts that aren't teaching, you know, like maybe there's a lower rank teaching. When I was purple and brown, oftentimes there were black belts in my classes when I was teaching. That's an important part of that. But, you know, so they don't necessarily have to be teaching or competing to still make a good black belt. Like they're furthering they're being a part of the rising tide. I think that's a like good way to look at it. You know, they're still maybe rolling with their teammates or helping them with their game plans or, you know, just even being somebody on the mat to look up to.
Yeah. Still drilling, still learning, still growing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that kind of shows, you know, I don't know, just like, that there are different different types of black belts. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a world champion. You don't have to be, you know, selling instructionals or whatever to still be a valid and, you know, amazing part of the community.
Yeah, agreed.
That was a short podcast. I think we did it. What else are your thoughts on it?
You know, my heart goes out to Amy because I really, really struggled at brown belt with the thought of being a black belt at that point. You know, I knew it wasn't coming for a period of time, but I also know you pretty well. And so I knew some of the timeline that you were probably considering. And so, you know, I appreciate that I had you sort of challenging the things I was saying about, you know, I just thought I would know more. I thought I would be better. I thought I would have an answer for everything. Because at white belt, black belts seem magical. Black belts have answers for everything, it feels like. But the thing is, black belts have answers for white belt problems. Black belts have answers for blue belt problems. Probably even still purple belt problems. But as people rank up, you know, they create new problems for you that you're solving and that kind of thing. That's the fun of jujitsu.
Yeah, but I mean, you even see me still. You know, I just got my first degree on my black belt, so I'm 3 years deep in it, and I'm like 25 years into training. You see me still when somebody asks a question, I'll say, I don't know, let's try it. Let's see, you know, like, not always. Sometimes I'm like, I wouldn't do that, but, you know, or, okay, I'm fine with that too, but I'm still learning. And almost everyone says when they get their black belt, they're starting over.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't know that I necessarily felt that way, but, you know, a lot of gyms look at black belt as the teaching belt, and I've been teaching since I was a white belt. So I probably just have a very different feel about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that you've had your black belt for a few months, do you feel like a black belt?
Well, like a week ago, we were talking about going to a camp and you teaching, and I forgot I was even a black belt. I was like, yeah, you should do that. That'd be cool. I wonder if they'd let me come too.
And you're like, oh.
I mean, I think a hard thing about rank, whether it's you think you're owed a rank or you think you're being ranked up too fast, the thing about it is if you don't trust your coach's ranking of you, then kind of why are you with that coach? And I don't mean that in a mean way, but if you don't trust your coach's discretion of what they think, then sort of what's the point, you know? So how I felt is I didn't personally feel ready. I don't know that I ever would have given myself a black belt, but I would not question your or Rachel's determination because you know what you're looking for. In the same way that I feel like I know what I'm looking for in lower ranks, you know, I don't necessarily know what I'm looking for in a black belt yet because I just got there. But I think as you ascend the ranks, you kind of start to recognize what those lower belts look like. And when I say lower belts, I mean just the belts below you and that kind of thing. So, you know, for me, it was more just trusting, like, Rachel's seen me teach, Ray has seen me teach, you've seen me teach, all of you have seen me do jujitsu and compete, despite the fact that I've not competed well since really, like, purple belt, and all of you guys decided that it was time, so I certainly defer to that.
Yeah, you know, like, one of my favorite thought processes is, like, not to respect opinions of people you wouldn't ask for their opinion. So, you know, like if you have haters or, you know, like if there's online bullying or whatever, if you wouldn't specifically ask for their opinion, don't take it in. And I think this is kind of that same thought process, right? Like if you don't trust your coach, then should you be getting ranked under that coach?
Yeah. So I think the answer is trust your coach.
Yeah.
Your coach knows better than you do. And especially if you're the kind of person with imposter syndrome, ignore her. She's rotten.
She's rotten.
She's a rotten little rat in your brain telling you things that aren't true.
Yeah.
And like Amy's good. Amy's good at jujitsu, you know? So for her specifically, I mean, black belt hasn't come yet, but like, girl, it's coming. You're good at jujitsu. I'm sorry to tell you. It is what it is. Sometimes you just stumble your way into black belt. That's how I feel. But, you know, even if you feel like you don't deserve a rank, you can earn your way into that rank, right? Like, I have the rest of my jujitsu journey to feel like I deserve it.
Yep, yep. And that's something we've often said at lower belts. Like, when people don't feel like they deserve their blue belt or their purple belt or, you know, any of them, then it's what do you think that belt looks like? And can you emulate that? Like, can you rise to that occasion?
Another thing that we did when we were talking about rank and that sort of thing is we talked about some like specific people, you know, people I look up to or people that I think are good at jujitsu, you know, and we kind of talked about like, why would it be different for you and that kind of thing. And I don't mean like you should compare yourself to others, because that's, comparison is the thief of joy. You know, in jujitsu, it's all about your journey and what you're capable of. But at the same time, sometimes it's good to look at other people similarly situated and say, okay, yeah, I look up to her. She knows what she's doing. Yeah, I can hang with her. Like, that's not a big deal. Okay. You know, the black belt title feels a little daunting, I think. You know, it's like kind of like you did it, but in a sense, you have so much left to do.
Yeah, yeah. And that's the beauty of jujitsu, right? It is a never-ending learning process. You can always be getting better.
Yeah. And that's how I feel when people are, you know, feeling like they're owed ranks that they don't have yet. It's, you know, sure, cool, that's the 2 inches that cover your waist, but learn jujitsu.
Yeah.
You know, do more jujitsu.
Yeah. I hope this has been helpful, not just for Amy. This isn't just a podcast directly for her, but for anyone who is, you know, about to get a belt or knows that their belt's coming. You know, sometimes people know that like there's testing coming and they stop coming to class. They start to self-sabotage.
I'm laughing because I basically have not been back to judo since he told me I should test for my yellow belt.
So this still happens in other sports as well.
I was like, gross. I do not want to do that.
Okay. All right. Well,
I'm working on it. I'm going back.
So this is also a podcast for Risser. Don't self-sabotage. Keep showing up and, you know, you're going to earn your way there. And if not, like if you feel like you didn't, then just keep showing up.
I also think that, you know, not all coaches handle this well, but just having a really direct conversation, you know, your journey is yours. Your jujitsu is yours. So talking to your coach about, hey coach, I'm just, you know, I'm not feeling like I'm there yet. Could you tell me what you see in me? Or hey coach, what do you think I could be working on? You know, I'd love to know what you're looking for from me in the future. You know, those can be really productive conversations. You know, as a coach, I try to have those conversations, maybe not like, hey, do this and you'll get your blue belt. But, you know, I make those suggestions of what I think might help. And if they listen, it's like, okay, cool, we're making progress. And if they don't, it's kind of like, well, you do you. Like, that's your journey. But, you know, as your coach, those are the kind of things I'm looking for, you know? Sometimes that means more rounds or more technique or, you know.
Yeah. I love when people ask me what to work on, and sometimes it'll be like, okay, let me watch you train over the next week and then I'll give you specifics. Because sometimes one of the things I'm looking for is just more training, right? Like, not that I want you to be there more hours, but like I need more time under your current belt or your current stripes or whatever. But sometimes it's like, yeah, I'll let you know what to work on, but let me watch you for a while, specifically like thinking those thoughts of like, what techniques can you be working on? And sometimes, you know, it's stuff like, I can't give you a blue belt until I know I can trust you with lower rank, or until you have a guard game, or, you know, until you can't get a purple until you start expanding your guard, or, you know, like just things like that. So, and you know, I don't just make stuff up to make stuff up. I had a coach that did that to me once, said that I would get my purple belt when I learned lasso guard. And this is, you know, like internet wasn't that prevalent then. I mean, it was, but not to the extent that it is now.
Not the technique that's available now. I mean, it really was a very different time.
Yeah. And so I just kept asking, like, hey, will you teach me some lasso? Will you teach me some lasso? And then one day he was like, why are you so obsessed with lasso?
I want my purple belt. I've been a blue belt for 17 years.
And I compete constantly. So it's got to be lasso guard. That must be the thing. It's
the one flaw in my game plan.
So I'm not making stuff up just to make it up. It is, you know, like holes that I see that I'm, you know, want people to work on.
Do you want to talk about the other things you look for, like your pie?
Yeah, definitely. So I do consider it a pie. Not all pieces have to be equal, but I'm looking for time on the mat, and that is active time, you know, like time you're actually drilling and taking notes and rolling and all of that, like actively doing jujitsu, not just hanging out, which if hanging out is your journey, that's fully fine. It's just going to be a longer one. Competition. So how well are you competing? And if you don't compete at all, that's okay as well. But then the other pieces of the pie have to be bigger, right? Your overall technical knowledge for your rank, right? I don't expect the white belt to know all the fancy stuff, but I do expect the white belt to know fundamentals. So if the white belt only knows fancy stuff, then we have to work on your fundamentals before you can be a blue belt. How well you roll with your peers and moral compass. So it is my intention to never give a blue, purple, brown, or black belt to somebody who doesn't fit in line with being a role model.
Yeah. They slip through the cracks, but usually not by purple and definitely not by brown.
Yeah. Yeah. So far, so good. So that's what I'm looking for in promotions. And usually I give that speech anytime I do a number of promotions. So like if I'm just doing a couple of stripes or whatever, I don't go through all of it. But anytime, especially if I'm giving belts, I do give that whole speech about what I'm looking for, which we do have some promotions coming up this weekend at our team training. So
I'm very excited about them.
Me too. So yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, and our gym is a little different in the sense that we don't do tests particularly. You know, some gyms have learned these techniques, and you can have your next belt. And, you know, for us, we're a small enough gym that we have the ability to not have to do that. You know, we have the ability to just sort of evaluate people, and we are constantly evaluating people. Like, we really talk about rank all the time. You know, it's just as important to us as it is to them. But we don't do, like, a test, because I just don't think that's as all-encompassing, right? Just because you don't know 4 different straight ankle lock setups doesn't mean you don't get your purple belt or whatever, you know. Yeah. Like some of those tests can be really hyper specific and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And you know, like for us, we care about like being able to modify your game based on your body and your abilities and all that kind of stuff, and I think a test doesn't always allow for that.
Yeah, it's your jiu-jitsu based on what your potential is, what you're capable of.
Yeah.
So I like that way. It doesn't work for everybody, but it works for us.
Yeah. I think that's great.
Yeah. So hopefully you guys took something out of this, or this was one of those, like those TikToks where it's like, if you're not Amy Dillon, scroll. Waiting. Waiting. Okay. Now it's just us and Amy.
Speaking of TikTok, you can find me on TikTok at @Roll_model or AJ Klingerman. Still nobody's told me if you can find me as AJ Klingerman. Somebody look. You can find the podcast at Beauty and the Gi on Instagram. And what else? I'm AJ Klingerman everywhere you go.
I think that's a wrap, yeah?
I think that's a wrap. Okay, so tune in next time and we'll see you
on the mat.
Beauty and the Gi is a production of the Brassy Broadcasting Company.
And brought to you by Role Model Grappling.
All right.
Pushed it twice.
Nice.
2 times in a row. Got it.
Okay, bye.
Post-podcast edition, we actually were able to change AJ's TikTok handle to AJ Klingerman. So now you can find her at AJ Klingerman wherever you go. Okay, bye.